Hello, and welcome back to our podcast, Our Two Cents. Let's chat. As always, I'm joined by Vivek.
Hi, how are you, Kirtana?
I am overall, I'm good. I'm a little stressed and I'm feeling a little overwhelmed. Junior year has proven to be not easy, but alas, we are pushing through. How are you?
I would second that. I would say pretty much the same. I don't think there's anyone who really has a complete handle on what they're doing in junior year. So I'd say, and that's not true, probably. That's just me wishing that it wasn't just me. But anyway, I think it's kind of funny that like we were supposed to have an episode come out last week, I think, and the episode before that we had talked about like, the stressors of college culture and all of that, and it seems that we are now poetically succumbing to those stressors, which is, kind of, like I said, kind of poetic.
Yeah, very ironic that our last episode was like don't pay attention to all these like norms about what college you should be getting into and the pressures that you feel as a high schooler and the American education system, but then we simultaneously did not release an episode because we were both so overwhelmed with everything else that was going on in life. But
We found
yeah.
ourselves as the perpetrators of that which we advocate against.
Yes. Yes, couldn't have said it better myself. The last 3 weeks have been quite eventful. Arguably, they have been more eventful than this entire year thus far, starting with the infrastructure bill that was passed. Then there was the SB8 bill, the attack on abortion in Texas, Hurricane Ida. Now there's the Tropical Storm Nicholas. Obviously, the prolonged escalation in Afghanistan, which is the theme of today's episode. That is the conversation we will be having. It will be about Afghanistan. And Labor Day was last weekend. And I just found this quick statistic that also, as if we don't have enough problems, COVID-19 cases have been up 300% this Labor Day in comparison to 2020 Labor Day.
God.
300%. With a vaccine, with, you know what I mean? In some cases, increased measures. Of course, in other areas, we have let loose a little bit because of the vaccine. But yeah, so a lot is happening.
Just
A
like it's
lot is
been
happening.
a constant like shitstorm basically. And like you even told me, I think a few minutes ago, about this new like tropical storm Nicholas heading towards the Gulf, heading towards the Texas coast. And I think it's funny because if you hadn't told me, I probably wouldn't have known for at least 2 days, because like there's just so much happening
There's
on top of
so
like what we
much.
said of the, having to keep up with school and everything. So it's just like this constant like I don't even
Yeah,
know
and
how to describe it.
I hate to make this all about like us because we are in such a privileged position, and it's like stupid to complain about it, but I'm gonna say it because I feel like a lot of our friends and a lot of people that we surround ourselves with can relate to it. But burnout right now is real. Like, I know that we are not personally going through a lot of these things. Like, we're not in the middle of Hurricane Ida, luckily. You know what I mean? We're not an Afghanistan refugee. We are so lucky and we are so privileged. But it's also like taking a moment to sort of like think, oh my God, what is going on right now in the world is crazy and it's intense and it just feels like it's all weighing on your shoulders, even if you have nothing to really do with it.
Well, and
You
I do
know?
think that's a big thing, is that lots of us as teenagers, but also, lots of adults struggle with that feeling of,
Helplessness.
it's a little reductive of personal struggle when you really put it in perspective. You
Yeah.
like people will put it in perspective, and of course we're not, advocating to do that. You're allowed to, feel your feelings, but like it's just like when you look at the world, it feels like there are such worse places to be. So I guess that's our
Yeah.
little PSA to, if you're feeling sad, feel sad. Don't feel like you have no reason to.
Yeah, you are valid, and this is us validating you and whatever you're going through at the moment.
So we obviously, as Kirtana said, we are going to be talking about Afghanistan. Now, what's happening in Afghanistan is obviously, you know, very scary. Just for the average person to think about the fact that, like, you know, a country can fall that quickly. But what people need to realize is it has not been this quick. You know, reaching back all the way when we had Reagan in power, it was actually Reagan who armed the Mujahideen, which, you know, became the Taliban and, you know, Al-Qaeda. So it's almost been this sort of, like, trend of American white nationalism / imperialism. So it's been going on for quite a while. And for those who don't know, in the past few weeks or even past month or two, it was the U.S. Joe Biden said he would follow through on his order on, well, it was on Trump's order, that all U.S. troops would be out of Afghanistan. And quite symbolically, I think he said, we will have all troops out by September 11th. And so basically it's just been, you know, a storm of shit, not even a shit storm, a storm of shit of just trying to get of, you know, Biden and the U.S. officials trying to get American troops out of Afghanistan, and in the process leaving, you know, this sort of void, this power vacuum open to succumbing to the Taliban. And then that's the other part, is that the Taliban, which had been taking control slowly and slowly, Kabul, the capital of Afghanistan, and now have established complete control over the region.
Yeah, and going back to the point that you made about American imperialism / nationalism, it's like, I feel like a lot of the conversation that's happening, at least here in America, and this conversation can go on for decades if we let it, is like, should Biden have pulled out? Should we have continued to keep our troops there? Whatever, whatever. And, you know, it's easy to blame any executive, as we mm-hmm. always do, and I can completely see the reasoning behind that. But, like, if you look at it from an objective point of view, every president from Reagan to Biden right now, like, could be blamed for this. You know what I mean? Exactly. I feel like every one of them has made decisions that have ultimately led to what is going on in Kabul and in Afghanistan right now. Right. Like, I think it's, we can play the blame game for eons on end, but I think we all need to realize that this isn't like, oh, this one person screwed up and that's like, you know what I mean? This is the result. Like, a multitude of people screwed up, and we have been screwing up for decades, and now this is the situation we're in.
Lots of screwing, yeah, everyone.
Yes. Yeah. It's heartbreaking on a different level, because you just sort of feel like, yes, you feel helpless, but it's not like, you know what I mean? You know, there's nothing that, like, we can't just, like, fly over to Afghanistan and, like, run into the fire, but it's also, right, like, it's so complicated, because then you come into this whole thing of refugee intake and immigration and how we work through that, and then there's so much debate and complications that come with that aspect of everything that's going on. But right, then it's also like, do we even want to allow these refugees to come in, or do we want to, like, you know what I mean, send troops back in? And then I don't know, it's just so multifaceted.
Well, and that's what has been sort of a running theme, is that it's just so complicated. Really, it boils down to just, you know, America fucked up once again. But, like, obviously, it's much more nuanced now, especially mm-hmm. if you look at it from a global view than that. You know, the Taliban has completely taken over. They've expressed that they're, you know, interested in enforcing, you know, rigid gender roles, and, you know, mm-hmm. also all sorts of, you know, religiously bigoted things. And so it's really just, it's been like a constant storm. I'll just add quickly, what I was talking about earlier was the anti-Taliban resistance movement led by Ahmad Massoud, who was a son of one of the anti-Taliban commanders from earlier in the
war, from the war on terror.
Yeah, and so he said he there have been rumors that he, well, I guess to start from the beginning, it was reported that he was organizing troops in the Panjshir Valley, which, if you don't know where that is, it's like northeastern Afghanistan. And if you know what Afghanistan looks like, then you know that really eastern is the most north you can get. But alas, I digress. But there were rumors that he was organizing troops and, you know, ammunition in the Panjshir Valley. And he has now called for a national uprising against the Taliban. He said on Friday, and I'll just share. He said, wherever you are, inside or outside, I call on you to begin a national uprising for the dignity, freedom, and prosperity of our country. And he said that on Monday. So it's been sort of, you know, there's still stuff going on. People think that, you know, because the worldview is so U.S.-centric or even just Western-centric, it's like once mm-hmm. the Americans leave, oh, okay, now it's done, we've lost. But there is still conflict going on in the Taliban, or in Afghanistan, forgive me. So it's still going on. It's stuff is still happening.
Yeah, and as a lot of things seem to have sort of unraveled the past 2 years, I know that this too will only get worse before it gets better. And as for the rebel groups, I feel like there are so many weak links within this region. Even a couple years ago with Sudan and the group of rebels that sort of organized there, and then we're seeing that again here. It's just like, my sort of take on this whole thing, or my sort of perspective on this, is that there's no stopping any war that might erupt from all this, if that makes sense. I feel like the only thing any of us can do is try our best to keep the people that have nothing to do with it safe and give them opportunities for them to, like, you know what I mean, to rebuild, to restart. And I feel like if we get caught up in all of the political messes that have been, you know, created as a result of everything that's happened the past 20, 30, 40 years, as teenagers, I mean, if we get caught up in that, and if we start, like, fighting amongst ourselves on who is right and who is wrong, that's not going to result in anything productive.
Right.
We should, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If I'm making sense when I say that. But...
No, yeah, I get what you mean. It's just been, you know, it's almost like, and I'm sure we've all seen, you know, the trending hashtag on Twitter about Taliban Texas, which I think is another thing we're going to discuss later. But it's just the fact of the matter is that this group, the Taliban, has expressed that they are not interested in helping the rights of, you know, women's rights or minority groups, whether it be by, you know, ethnicity or by, you know, gender orientation or gender identity or sexual orientation. So it's just kind of like, I mean, personally, I did not think we should have left. I do think we had a moral debt to pay there as I said earlier, ever since Reagan armed the group that became the Taliban. But that's my opinion. And the problem is that not everyone shares that opinion. And so, you know, we've removed ourselves from the situation and sure, maybe saved, you know, a bunch of American lives, but it's almost like, what about the you know,
lives that we put in danger to begin with?
Right.
Those were people that we...
Afghani lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. Everything that's going on is crazy.
It is crazy. And I really do feel like it was, not to sound like a complete, not to, you know, whip out my preschool vocabulary, but it just always seemed to me like a lose-lose situation. Like, felt like there was no winning. Like, Biden did say something about, like, the turn of events have shown that there is no right time for us to pull out, or he said something like that.
Right.
And I was sort of like, I can understand the people who are like, no, we shouldn't have pulled out, and we should have supported you know, whether it's the Afghanistani rebels or, you know, right. troops who are trying to fight for their lives there, we should have, like, supported them and equipped them for artillery, et cetera, et cetera. I understand the reasoning behind that, but
right.
I also feel like maybe there wasn't, you know what I mean? Like, if we didn't pull out now, when would we have before mm-hmm. the situation? I feel like, if anything, I feel like our involvement to begin with had only escalated the situation.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like our continued involvement, I don't know how, you know what I mean? How much right. good that could have done. And I'm right. no, like, you know what I mean, military expert. So I'm kind of very, I just sort of listen when people have things to say about that and right. absorb it.
Well, and just for some, like, quick perspective, in 2015, I saw this map, and it showed that, you know, there was still government control of, you know, Kabul and Kandahar and, like, Herat and all of those, these are all big cities and territories, you know, it's not just the city, it's obviously the territory in Afghanistan. And now there are only, first of all, there's no plain government control anywhere anymore. There was only some contested control in some provinces above Kabul, but obviously now, eventually, that will, you know, fade out, and we'll see the beginning of a remilitarization of the Middle East, you know, a continued warfare between Shiite Muslims and Sunni Muslims. And eventually, who knows what could happen? You know, anything, literally anything could happen.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of where the fear sort of comes from, because the Taliban's takeover of Afghanistan, like, happened a lot quicker than I feel like anyone anticipated. Like, you know what I mean? We were all right. seeing the news reports. We were all, like, watching it and hearing about it. And we, you know what I mean? We could see it happen in front of our eyes very gradually. But, you mm-hmm. know, as soon as their president fled and then Biden was like, we're withdrawing our troops officially, it was all like, whoa, that happened in the matter of, like, you know what I mean? Days. Right. Days, and it was just, yeah, unprecedented, yeah. I feel like.
Well, and that's the thing, is that, you know, as soon as, like, the news sort of, like, definitely spiked down, you know, as soon as, mm-hmm. you know, our boys were out of there, the news kind of just, like, stopped covering it at all.
Yes, I feel like, if anything, we see less of what is happening on their side of this, on the mainland in Afghanistan, and where the news is more so concerned with the politics, the American politics behind it. And right. it's like, can we for once get our heads out of our own asses right. and forget about all the problems that we have here? Because yes, as many problems as we have here, we are in a much better standing mm-hmm. compared to any other country, I would say.
Right.
In considering how populous we are and how vast this nation is, whether it's right. in terms of COVID, whatever it is, we are in a much better position to provide aid than any other nation is.
Exactly.
First world or otherwise. Right. So, I like, even CNN, like, for one second, can we stop talking about what this means for the U.S.?
Yeah.
And talk about what this is already meaning for Afghanistani refugees, what this is already meaning for rebel groups.
Right. And yeah. that's the other most annoying thing, is that they'll say shit like, oh, this didn't, we've all, I'm sure you've all seen the post of the news headline that says Afghanistan, the Taliban is sitting on $800 billion of jewels, or maybe it was $8 billion, I can't remember the number, that the world desperately needs. And he was like, my God. What did you just say? Like, I don't understand why you thought it was a good idea to write that. Like, you seriously thought it was a good idea to talk about the currently most crisis-ridden country, depending on what you look at, and say, wow, they're sitting on jewels. The world really needs those. You know, like, yeah. what was going through your mind to the author of that person?
I have not seen that post, but
I have to find it and read exactly what it said.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's also just, like, a testament to what journalism has become
yeah.
within this country. Like, honestly, oh, yeah, don't, like, forget, like, the hundreds of thousands of civilian lives that are at risk for death right now, let's just talk about how Afghanistan may be potentially a minerally rich country.
Exactly. Okay, here it is. Here it is. Oh my God, even worse. Okay, well, first of all, it's from CNN.
No! So,
of course.
No!
And then also here, it's loading. Come on. You know what? I hate my Mac sometimes. Okay, here we go. It says, the Taliban are sitting on $1 trillion worth of minerals that the world desperately needs. What does that mean? This is by someone named Julia Horowitz from CNN Business. Of course, it's from CNN Business. I want to ask this, Julia. Why did you think that it was a good idea to write about the world needing the $1 trillion worth of minerals that the and not the fact that the Taliban is fucking sitting on them?
This is exactly what I'm saying. Like, as soon as, you know, Biden was like, oh, like, no, you know what I mean? When he sort of took on the role of dad and he was like, no, like, no arguing with me. Like, what my word is the final say, whatever. As soon as he did that, the entire conversation shifted from, like, what can we be doing in, you know, to aid the crisis, to, oh, how can we, like, what does this mean for America?
Right.
Like, how can we benefit from this? And how is this negatively affecting us? Right. How is this going to affect our economy? How is this going to affect our daily lives?
I feel like everyone in the world, you know, like in the international community, probably thinks America's like that person that's like, I know you're the one getting harassed by this person, but I'm feeling like the secondhand trauma and it's all about me and how it's going to, like, you know, affect me negatively, right?
And I completely understand, like, that, you know, what I completely understand that the primary principle is national interest. I get that. But we already pulled out our troops. We're already, we already checked off the box of national interest by doing that.
Right.
Like, we're already looking out for our people. Like, you know what I mean?
It just seems, really selfish.
We are selfish. And
I mean, the best word I have.
Yes, yes. I was having this conversation with my mom the other day, and this might be a sort of oversimplification, but the other day was 9/11, of course. Again, how it's sort of, I guess, in your words, poetic that we're talking about this 20 years after 9/11, and this is the episode. That was not planned, by the way. I just like to put that out. That was not planned.
Yeah.
Anyways, my mom and I were having this conversation, and she was saying how, well, firstly, she was, you know, basically shit-talking the U.S. and the war on terror, of course. But she was also saying how, like, the problems that we're now trying to... like, every modern-day American problem, whether, you know, regardless of whether it's international or national, they are problems that our government has created.
Right.
And we... and in most cases, okay, fine. Like, there's been some attempts to try to fix it. But then you see something like this, and it's just like, oh my god, like, it feels like we're just a group of toddlers, and we're just, you know what I mean? I don't know if this is making sense, but we're a group of toddlers running around free during recess, and there's, like, no teacher there to tell us, oh no, like, you need to fix the mess that you've made, like.
Right.
And it just feels like, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I know I'm gonna get, like, flack for this. Even if my dad hears this, he's gonna be like, what are you saying? And I know that, like, it seems controversial to people, but it's really not. What I posted on my story the other day on Instagram was that the tragedy, the loss of life on 9/11 was completely preventable. And you cannot blame just the Taliban and say, oh, it was just them, it was just those, you know, those Muslims coming to, like, you know, kill us. No, you can't just say that, because the reason that 9/11, you know, was even, you know, I won't say the reason that it happened, but the American government, it's almost like if you kick a dog, right? If you kick a dog, it's going to bite you back. If you continually kick this dog, if this poor dog is just at the, you know, and receiving all your kicking, which in this case would be the, you know, overreach into the Middle East, the bombings, the killing of their civilians. If you do that, then obviously the thoughts are going to fester in the minds of those people, and they're going to grow up with this huge like hatred for America. And then when some tragedy does happen, you can't just blame them. We have to blame our government. Our government did play a big part. It's just a fact. If our government had just minded their business.
I won't completely disagree with you, but I do think it's very overreaching for you to say that it could have been completely preventable. I disagree wholeheartedly. I think what you're more, I mean, this is what I understood from what you just said, but I think you're more so referring to the sort of hate, the super, like the increase in intense hate crimes that, you know, Muslims in America were facing after 9/11. Am I correct in saying that? You were saying that that aspect could have, like, we can't just say, oh, it's the Muslims and it's the Taliban.
Right. No, I didn't mean
is the, that what you were referring
the event
to?
Of 9/11. I wasn't talking about that. Of course, that's a much more nuanced, like, foreign policy discussion, whether it was preventable or not. I'm saying the after effects of this, like, this hatred towards Muslims or this, anything. I mean, that all preventable.
I mean, I feel like you could say that about anything, though. You can say that about, like, segregation. You can say that about the xenophobia that came along with COVID.
Right.
That kind of hate is always preventable, but, you know, that's the nature of people.
Right.
But then actually, that sort of, while we're here on the subject, I want to say something else. I have been seeing, and this is not, like, directed to anyone specifically, but I have been seeing so many people sort of comparing, like, COVID and 9/11 and how they're, you know, a lot of whatever civilian lives have been lost are tragic and whatever. And I want to say it's honorable that anyone feels the need to sort of, you know, mention either. But I think it's completely unfair to compare them or to say that they are the same.
Yeah,
they're not. Sure, there may be similarities. Like I was just saying, the xenophobia that came with COVID and then, of course, the Islamophobia that the intensified Islamophobia that resulted from 9/11 in America. Sure, there are patterns of similarity as there always are with any two variables, but it is so ignorant to compare the two. It is so ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like if you're doing that, I wholeheartedly condemn you. I'm sorry. Actually, I'm not sorry.
What do you
mean? I wholeheartedly condemn you. And I feel like an event also, something that I feel like a lot of people our age, it's cool and it's amazing if people of our generation or of our age feel empowered to talk about 9/11, or if they have any family members or any sort of, you know, personal anecdotes to share, that's amazing, cool. But I think we also need to realize that we were not alive when it happened. We will never understand, you know, what I mean, what it personally must have felt like to be there on that day,
right,
like fully conscious of what was happening. And I feel like it's an event that can't be reduced to something like this. I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and they were saying how everything in my lifetime, everything in your lifetime as an American constituent, whether it is public education, whether it is the control of privatized businesses, whether it is our current economy, whatever, can all be traced back to 9/11. And I was like, wow, you're right. You know what I mean? Our daily lives, like, I'm not saying it in the sense of, like, it is this huge tragedy that occurred, but I'm not saying it in that sense. I'm more so saying that every decision that I feel like the U.S. has taken since, whether it's just Biden pulling out the troops, how long has it been? A couple weeks? Like, officially making that statement a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Or whether it's even the state of our economy now, I feel like all of these decisions they've made, our government has made in mind that, they've sort of made with this fear that something like 9/11 could happen again at any moment because they were so unprepared the first time,
right,
if that makes sense.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
So then when you say, like, you can't compare the two tragedies, are you referring to the fact that, like, 9/11 was, you know, something not, you know, unhitherto what had
happened?
Well,
you were saying something, again, correct me if I'm wrong, you were saying something of how, like, the aftermath of 9/11 could have been preventable, and I was saying, well, yes, that could be true to any sort of social injustice. Yeah, that could be. But the thing about the difference between, like, but the truth is, COVID could have truly been preventable.
Right.
You know what,
like,
I mean?
It was in
every
our
repercussion
grasp
of COVID could have been, like, truly preventable.
Right.
in the sense that, like, even if, of course, it's a virus, so I'm not going to say that we could have gotten through this without a single life being lost. I'm saying the numbers, you know what I mean? Those were completely in our hands.
Right.
And we let that get out of hand.
Right.
The same, I feel like the same can't be said about 9/11.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Okay, I see what you mean. Yeah. And just to be clear, I'm not at all insinuating that, like, the people who lost their lives or, you know, our military, I'm not saying anything about them. I'm merely saying that when the American government decides that, you know, it's time to, you know, mercilessly go after these countries and stuff, then when...
When they decide to counterattack, we can't sit there and be like, oh, we had nothing to do with this.
Exactly.
This was just out of someone else's spite.
Right. And
yes,
when I
that
say,
I agree
when
with.
We say we mean the American government cannot.
Yes. Yes.
The people that lost their lives on 9/11, the tragedy itself are all, you know, just awful, awful losses for our nation. You know, it's awful that we lost so many, you know, innocent lives. And, like, it's so sad that really it was just, like, a senseless act of violence. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Now I feel like someone's going to, like, be like, well, Vivek, why are you saying 9/11 wasn't sad?
No. I think you were looking at it more from, I think, yes. I think it was actually my fault. I misunderstood the context in which you were speaking.
Oh, no, you're
fine. Yeah, but even to your point of, like, the... Stop. I'm gonna kill myself. Cut that out, Dikshu. If my mom hears that on the podcast, she's going to be like... Anyways. Anyways, going, you know, speaking to your point of, you know, the American government tends to sort of poke the bear a lot, and when the bear, you know, comes back to bite them in the ass, they're sort of just like... Huh? We didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
Yes. Again, I feel like that can be, you know, that example could be used for so many different events.
Right.
But also, like I was saying, going back, like, this was a conversation I was literally having with my mom the other day. It's like, the thing that she actually said was, she said, we're kind of like the Avengers. Like, we're the ones that make these, like, huge messes. We, like, turn the world upside down with the amount of chaos that we bring. And then, we're the ones that at the end of the day are struggling to fix the mess that we've made.
Right.
And it's not even like we're wholeheartedly attempting to fix it. We're more so complaining, even though it is our mess to clean up to begin with.
Exactly.
And
like, it's the same thing which hurricane was it a few years ago with Puerto Rico? It struck mainly.
Oh yes. I know what you're talking about.
Was it Maria? I don't think it was Maria. Maybe it was Maria.
It was Hurricane Maria.
Okay,
Hurricane
so Maria. Even that is an example of, you know, we obviously, the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico is a United States territory, but just the soul, like, you can just see the impacts of this U.S., you know, of the U.S. pillaging and using Puerto Rico as, you know, basically just like a resource and kind of forsaking all the people who live there and, you know, not worrying about them. And it's just like, so like, and then they'll be, you know, oh, so sad that Puerto Rico was hit by a hurricane. Let me, the president of the United States at the time, go out and throw, you know, Bibles or, well, no, he didn't throw Bibles, toilet paper rolls at people. Like,
yeah.
He didn't throw Bibles. My bad.
Oh my God. Oh my God. No, but that happens too. Like, a lot of the times when I, you know, political leaders, especially in the South, when things like this happen, they go on national television, they make public statements about, like, no, God is good and God will
Jesus.
Be with you. And I'm like, they don't, I, like, that's great. That's, I guess, that can be motivating, but what they need is funds. What they need is relief. And it is your responsibility. It is, exactly. And it is your responsibility to provide such tangible material to them, because it is, you know what I mean? It is, ultimately, firstly, Puerto Rico is in your jurisdiction, if we're using that example, but ultimately, it is a mess that you've caused. Like,
Well, and this,
the
whole thing, it just all ties back to Afghanistan, because you can see the same sort of religious bigotry there, because let's be honest, if it was a majority Christian nation, there would be a large or a larger portion of the populace. I don't know if, you know, the decision to remove troops would have been changed, but there would be a larger portion of people talking about, oh, you know what, it's all these poor people, all these refugees. But because of this, you know, train of Islamophobia that's been like barreling through the nation ever since 9/11 and before, it's like, you know, oh, they're foreign, they're like different people, we don't care as much about them.
What you said is just, that's like the entire point. That's so poignant, because you're exactly right. Like, if the Taliban was an organization that was preaching Christianity, nothing, you know what I mean?
Right.
The turn of events would have been completely different.
Right.
I don't think anything that's going on right now would have played out the way it has if the Taliban was Christian, or if Afghanistan was a Christian majority country. Like,
right. Well, that's exactly so many right. That just talk about just like organized religion is like chaos.
Yes.
Like everything about organized religion is chaos. It divides these, you know, countries of the world up into like factions, and it basically ruins the global community, which if you've taken Spanish 4 like me, you know, that's a big like unit we study and stuff. But like but like, okay, random segue, but like, so it's definitely a problem when, you know, I don't think anyone will deny that, you know, religious bigotry or religious discrimination, at least at face value, they won't agree that it's, you know, it's okay to discriminate. But we do, you know, like, regardless of whether at face value you're like, oh
yes,
I'm Christian and I love my Jewish and Muslim brothers and sisters. It's like, but honestly, are you showing that quote love by, like, you know, advocating for, you know, prevention of violence? No, you're not.
Yeah, I was going to say the exact same thing. I was going to say, we have this habit of going around and preaching equality to anyone who will listen to us and saying things like, oh, like, you know what I mean? Kind of promoting ourselves as people who just turn a blind eye to any sort of differences between groups of people.
Right.
But, like, that's not at all. Like, that's just a display. It's just an act. And also, a lot of the times, maybe you're not even, like, conscious of that. Like, you know what I mean? It's easy to be like, oh, I'm not racist, and I view everyone the same, and like that to begin with is obviously harmful and regressive, but I don't see color. Like, that in itself is obviously so harmful and regressive, but we keep talking about how this is a nuanced issue, but it can all just be traced back to these very simple ideas.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, if you think about it, it's, not to get all existential, but we typically do, it's human error.
Yeah.
Like, that is the way we function. And, like, there's this also whole thing of, like, oh my god, like, you're such a snowflake and all of that. And it's like, no, like, for so long, we didn't talk about these things, and we didn't say, oh, like, no, you have, you know what I mean?
Right.
You are withholding religious discrimination in everything that you do and everything that you say.
Right.
We would just avoid those conversations. And so now that we're talking about it and we're saying the reason that all of, you know, whether it's Afghanistan, whatever, is playing out the way it is because we hold these biases. All we're doing is saying that, and then, but people don't want to listen to that. They would rather continue to fight and watch entire nations crumble and watch innocent civilians die in poverty, famine, simply because they're living in terroristic countries that accept that, no, these are biases that we hold and we should correct them.
Exactly. Well, and I mean, if you don't mind, I wanted to segue, because that's a perfect segue.
Yes, go ahead.
Into SB8. If we're talking about, you know, religious bigotry or unconscious biases.
Oh, my God. Yes, go ahead. Go ahead.
It's really a perfect opportunity to point out the fact that, you know, the basis of the pro-life argument is built on, I don't like what you're doing, I think it's murder, so I want to stop it. It's based on, oh, whether we recognize it or not, it's based on the fact that, oh, the majority of teenage pregnancies are women of color. Okay, well, that's not as important. You know, it's based on the fact that people hold these ideals that they believe are right so close to their heart. And that's fine. You believe your, you know, backwards ideals, or in my opinion, backwards ideals. But it's the fact that then they'll take it and they'll apply it to the law. And that's like truly, you know, that's like another level of hurt. Because in a country that's supposed to be secular, but let's be honest, when has it ever been secular? You know, it's just, it's not.
I sort of disagree. Not disagree in that, in the sense of like secularism and what is going on with SBA, but when it comes to the abortion bill, mm-hmm. honestly, oh, it's so clear. It's so glaringly obvious that they, at this point, they aren't even, like, sure, maybe religion is an excuse that they're using, but that's only an excuse that they're using to mask their real intent to control a woman's body. Because right. they're not even using, like, before they would say, like, Catholicism and it's against their religion, whatever, whatever, but now they're not even using that excuse properly. You know right. what I mean? Like, it's gotten to the point where it's so obvious that it's not about religion. Like, even Greg Abbott knows that it's not about religion and it's not about that. All he wants to do is take away a woman's choice to right. You know what I mean? Her, like, and it's so obvious. Like, before they would, you know, at least they would, there would be some quotes from Bible verses, etc., etc., or whatever religion it may be, and they would be like, it's against my religion, and they would argue that. But I feel like nowadays, especially with the SB8 bill, there isn't even that. Like, they're not even trying to hide the fact right. that it's as plain and obvious as
it's just blatant. They just
don't want to let a woman choose. Like,
right. Well, and that's
and actually, also... yes, go yes, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was actually trying to pull up his tweet, the one the other day where he was all like, Biden's vaccine mandate is an assault on private businesses. And he was like, I issued an executive order protecting Texans' right to choose. You issued an executive order for the right to choose? Like,
it's like
you think what Biden did was unconstitutional? I was, oh, I can talk about this for ages.
There was no way he did not know exactly what words he was choosing to use. There's mm-hmm. no way that he wasn't like, I'm going to put right to choose in there as, you know, a kick of dirt in the face of, you know, everybody who's pro-life, that, haha, I got to pass this extremely restrictive bill and you didn't get to do anything about it.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way that he didn't, there's no way that he's that stupid that he didn't realize.
That's exactly what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, they're not even using their usual sort of excuses that have, you know, been held since Roe v. Wade, like the same religion and the, you know what I mean? They haven't even been using Jesus. Those excuses anymore. Like right. they're so blatantly just showing that they're stupid.
Right.
And all they care about is controlling a woman's autonomy. It's well, so and, obvious. And that's what's frustrating me the most.
Right. And the other thing is that what I was mentioning earlier about, you know, women of color is that the CDC, I have it pulled up here, actually. The CDC says that social determinants of health, such as low education, low income levels, or other low standards of living of a teen's family may contribute to high teen birth rates. Teens in certain mm-hmm. settings are more at risk for teen pregnancy and birth to other groups. For example, young women living in foster care or living in inner city households are more than twice as likely to become pregnant than young women living in the suburbs or in a rich white family. So it all is sort of, I don't know if I can even truly in my head tie it back to this, but it's all seeming to be connected to this sort of, like, you know, I don't even know how to describe it. Shoot, it just left my head. It's all tied back to this sort of connection with, you know, there's part of it that's connected to religion. Part of it is connected to race. A big part of it is connected to, you know, the patriarchy. It's all like in working in conjunction.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Gosh.
Wait, you need to summarize your earlier point to me, because you can cut this part out, but you were saying something about women of color and mm-hmm. sex ed and how, like, families, whatever, whatever, you need to, like, repeat that.
Okay, like, just, you want me to go more in depth, or you just need to, like, hear what just I said? Just
repeat it again. And Deekshu, you can, like, cut some of this out and, like, mash it up, so.
Okay, yeah. It was the CDC quote that, like, social determinants of health, like, low education and low income levels, and also being raised inner city in the inner city versus being raised out where there are low education or low income levels versus. That's a big, you know, determinant high teen birth rates.
Right, of course. And to that point, like, I mean, again, as you were just saying, how all of these other elements work in conjunction, mm-hmm. I feel like they can also all be traced back to just socioeconomic status, which, yeah. You know what I mean? All of that, it comes, you know what I mean? That all and has that roots in race. And
that can be traced back to a big disparity with people of color.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So exactly. Just, and I feel like, I don't know. I just feel like it's something that people get so little information about. And I feel like you can't make, it's quite honestly, when, you know, the news of the bill came out, I was just sort of, well, not only was I in shock and sort of spiraled a little bit, I was also sort of like, it's so stupid because the answer is right in front of them. Right. Like, you don't need to be taking these extremes. It's as simple as I'm a woman of color, but I'm very grateful to have always lived in the suburbs in a relatively nice house and et cetera, et cetera. But even I have taken like three federally certified health courses in high school and middle school and, right. You know, throughout all the times I spent in the education system, throughout all the years I've spent in the education system, sorry. And I have yet to have had a proper sex education course. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? It's as simple as that. Right. And even AOC the other day, she went on CNN and she was literally breaking down Biology 101 to Greg Abbott. So you know what I mean? It's not something that's like, these are not resources that are accessible to us.
Right.
Of course, you know, depending on your socioeconomic class, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the disparities are obviously a lot more wide.
Right.
But even in the life, you know, given the life that I sort of live in, I can even speak for my friends. Like, I'm now attending a charter high school, still no proper sex education class.
Wait, are we? And are we really?
Yeah, it's a charter school.
Really? Oh my God. Yeah. It's the way I didn't even know.
Yeah. And so the thing is, if like, you know what I mean? Okay, fine. I like my thing is, if schools can't even equip women or female presenting people to, you know enough about their bodily anatomy to make such decisions, then how do you expect men, you know, who have thus far, it has only been men who have had a say in anything that's been abortion related in this country. Right. How do you expect them to know if you can't even teach women about their own autonomy? And if you expect women to find out by themselves on the internet, then how, you know what I mean? You can't expect men to know. And then on top of that, you can't entrust men to make these decisions or pass such laws. Like,
because they don't know.
Understand it.
Because
What I'm saying. Like, the answer is so glaringly in front of you that I, a 16-year-old, can digest it and dissect it and I analyze it and spit it out back for you. How are you not getting this?
And there's, okay, the thing that, like, I'm sure, you know, my annoyance with it is, you know, unrivaled by, you know, people who are negatively affected by abortion, you know, restrictions and stuff. But there was this post that, like, you know, if we're going to make women not be able to have, you know, abortions, make all men have vasectomies. And, like, the comments were just filled with people saying, like, no, that's not fair. Then how will anyone get pregnant? And it was like, shut up. Shut up. Like, your point is invalid. Shut up. Like, it was the most, like, and again, that's why I can't even comprehend what women and women presenting people are going through with this, because, like, if it annoys me this much, then it must annoy y'all, like, even more. You know what I mean?
Can I just, I know this is a very serious conversation that we're having, but can I just pause and say that you have never sounded more Southern than how you have sounded throughout the recording of this episode. But regardless, you don't even understand how disgusting it is to exist in a society where I am constantly surrounded by men. It is the bane of my existence. I was in class a couple of weeks ago. I believe it was the first week of school. And we weren't talking about, but mm-hmm. literally just the term Wade was mentioned. Sorry, can't get words out of my mouth today. And immediately, only the term, nothing about the case, nothing about the ruling of the case, and nothing about abortion was mentioned. Just the term. And immediately, I can guarantee you that at least 10 to 12 men in the class groaned. I'm like, you're hearing the court case name and you're groaning because it's something you don't want to talk about? Imagine what I have to go through living as a woman. You know what right. I mean? Having my rights literally debated every year, if not every quarter of the year. Wow, you have the audacity to groan and mumble and make, you know what I mean, comment.
It's like, wow, you have to talk something... about it.
Yeah, you want to talk about how you don't want to, like, you're complaining about how it's so controversial and how it's something you'd rather not talk about because it makes you uncomfortable. It makes you uncomfortable?
Right.
It makes you uncomfortable. The audacity.
Right.
I could not stand it. I wanted to run out of that class. Yeah.
Oh, you should have just, like, slapped them. Was the teacher watching?
Yes. The teacher was there, and the teacher was like, "Why are you guys all groaning?" And they said, "Oh, because it's controversial." I was like,
I thought the teacher was going to be like, "Oh, themselves."
No. I was, it's quite annoyed. And honestly, even like abortion, there are so many, like I was saying earlier, at least, you know, before there would be some sort of argument around it. But now I feel like the arguments, like, you know what I mean? They're just baseless now and people it's are just saying whatever they want.
Mindless mumbling.
Yes. But
maybe we even the other day, in the bio of our podcast.
Mindless mumbling. We should. That's what we've been
quote,
doing.
... It's just devolved into mindless mumbling.
Yeah. But
It's just a complete shitstorm.
It is.
I feel like we keep saying that, but like it is.
Yeah.
So I think we forgot to mention this at the very beginning of our episode. I think we're like maybe reaching a closing point now. But we forgot to mention at the beginning of the episode, all the AdSense from listening to this. All the AdSense from listening to this episode will be going to the International Rescue Committee's Help Families in Afghanistan fund. I don't remember what our last episode was, which is crazy because we've only done four prior to this, but like if there is no charity for that, we will also be donating those AdSense to this. So, yeah, you're by simply listening, you know, and listening to the ads, you are helping out in what little way you can, especially if you're, you know, someone who's under 18 or who doesn't have a disposable income. And that's all I have. What do you have?
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly interject and say that our last episode was about college culture, and we did not have a charity that we associated ourselves with for that episode. Mm-hmm. So whatever AdSense we make from that episode will be split between this episode, of course, and the episode before that, which was, COVID relief. Whatever AdSense we make from this episode will be divided amongst the COVID-19 Solidarity Response Fund by the World Health Organization and the Help Families in Afghanistan and Worldwide Fund.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's all we have.
That's all we have. Thank you.
Bye.
Brought to you by Deekshu Devraseti for editing, Vanshika Khatwani and Jasmine White for graphics, Puneet Bajwa and Sanj Varyani for socials, and to my wonderful co-host Kirtana for putting up with me.